So this is the regular meeting of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1 Board of Commissioners. It is Wednesday, April 28th, 2021. It is 5:30. This is a regular meeting held remotely under COVID-19 emergency rules. The public can call in at 509-473-0276 and enter 423-534-455#. So I call this meeting to order. And Peggy, you can do roll call for us, please.
Okay. Commissioner Clary?
Present.
Commissioner Lehman?
Present.
Commissioner Lindstrom?
Present.
Commissioner Lacey Seitz? Absent. Commissioner Loring?
Here.
That's it. And Nathan Butler, administrator or superintendent.
Present.
And recording secretary Peggy Long.
Thank you, Peggy. Now we need to approve our consent agenda, and I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
All in favor?
Second. Aye.
Okay, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. And that brings us to outside reports, and we welcome Linda McCarthy from Mount Baker Planned Parenthood.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for inviting me. It's lovely to be here. And as I said, I hope in the fall that when we're doing this next presentation, that we'll be able to see each other in person. Let's see. Nathan, are you able to put up the slide deck? I hope. So I don't have that technology. So he's pulling that up. I just wanted to let you know it really was the most challenging year of our career. It was coming off the fourth year of a hostile administration and the pandemic, which hit us pretty hard. The bad news and the good news was, and I guess there's no good news, but it became real to us on March 27th when one of our volunteers died. You may have read the story about the woman in Mount Vernon who sang in the choir that was in the New York Times. She was one of our volunteers. And so before most of the country actually really accepted and understood what was happening, our staff really had this moment where this is going to be a big deal. And so we've been in high safety mode from that very moment on. And we've had maturations of policies and procedures that we met every day for months, and then every other day, and then now we're down to once a week. But I'm pleased to say that we've had no internal transmission of COVID at any of our sites. We had a couple staff that were tested positive from family members, but nobody transmitted internally, and we were able to keep our doors open, although we were challenged to see as many people. And some of you heard me say that we did not let this crisis go to waste. And after having telemedicine on our work plan for 2 years, we were able to literally put it together and launch it in 9 days. And we're delighted to have that. So this is just a snapshot of our services, where we are, and been here for like 53 years now. Since 69, but in Friday Harbor, San Juan County's since 1995. And that's our little storefront there on Reed Street. And we're happy to be nestled in there, which is just a block up from where we originally started, which is in the county building now. Okay, mm-hmm. Next slide. So we have three legs of our stool. We do medical services, education, and advocacy. We are very pleased to have, like I said, kept our doors open. We were a little surprised, but not surprised, when Governor Inslee, right off the bat, when he was announcing his very first closing of the state, he called out family planning programs and mandated that we keep our doors open for a full range of services and procedures. And I think he did that because there was some concern about pregnancy and COVID and the adverse outcomes. And so while it was a terrifying experience, our doors stayed open the entire time. And we managed to that crisis. So, and our education programs pivoted to online, and we have a teen council programs that provide education in the schools, and they converted all their, they have three big programs that they do, converted them all to online and continued their work, which is pretty remarkable. And then our advocacy programs kept going as well, as we've been working on getting back in the Title X program, we hope. And we've been working hard on that and on the state legislature. We went in for a budget increase, which our fingers crossed we will get this year. Will be the first budget increase we've had in about 25 years. Okay, where are we next? All right, so these are the services that we have. The services on the left are all available in the clinic. We do birth control, cervical and breast cancer screening, HPV vaccines, STI testing and treatment. We did a lot. I would have to say this last year, we did a lot more STI testing and treatment than we normally have. And I think, let's face it, people are home and they had nothing to do in their hands. And so they had fun and they needed to get tested. And we were there for them. We do pre-exposure and post-exposure medication for preventing HIV. We do a full range of gynecological care and different family planning visits, wellness, menopause, and pregnancy testing and options education. We do not provide in Friday Harbor abortion services, miscarriage management, colposcopy, and LEAP services. Or gender-affirming hormone therapy, but we will be doing at least a gender-affirming hormone therapy soon through telemedicine. The other services, patients come off island. And for those of you not familiar with what colposcopy and LEAP are, those are if you have an abnormal pap smear, they're high-level diagnostics when you have to go in. And we brought that in-house many years ago because what we discovered was we have a lot of patients that are mother, low-income mothers who, and when you have an abnormal pap, you don't feel it, it doesn't hurt, and you don't get your treatment when you need to get the treatment, and it, you become the worst-case scenarios, invasive cervical cancer, which is only a 15% survival rate. So we're able to intervene and do that, and we do it by guaranteeing we pay the lab, so the patient pays us, we pay the lab, so we keep a really great rate on that. And as an example, and we made a mistake several years ago and a patient brought a bill in to me. We are charged, at that time we were charged $35 a punch for each biopsy. And we had done three on this woman on one slide. So our charge was $105 or something like that. And her charge was $900. So what we were charged $35, the patient was charged $300. And so that you can see why patients don't go to the doctors to get that. But when they come to us, we continue to offer that on a sliding scale at a much low. We want them to pay that fee, but then we, you know, we slide it as well. And then the higher level, if that abnormal test continues to come back, we do a LEAP. It's like a big ice cream scoop looks like and takes a big chunk out. And that's a biopsy of higher level, and if that's abnormal, you're referred to a gynecological oncologist. And we had one case of uterine cancer diagnosed last year in our Bellingham Health Center, and I think two cases of breast cancer as well. So that is that slide. Does anybody have any questions on the services that we offer? Or we see people of all ages as well and all genders. Okay, next slide. So we're one of 49 Planned Parents across the country. We served 8,016 patients. That's a lower number than we normally serve, and that was related to the pandemic. But they still came in for 13,000 visits, and our abortion care was 594 visits last year, and 4.5% of all of our visits. That's a question we get asked all the time, so I'd like to put it in there on the slides. And in our Bellingham Center, we're open 6 days a week. In Mount Vernon, we're open 5 days a week. In Friday Harbor, we're open 1 day a week. And so we have a lot of availability of time. And not right now, the schedules are packed, but we're doing better. Okay. So here's a snapshot of what it looks like where those visits are. We did 238 visits in Friday Harbor, 3,800 in Mount Vernon, almost 4,000, and 9,072 in Bellingham. throughout last year. Okay. And these are the zip codes, just to give you a sense of those Friday Harbor patients. 131 of them come from Friday Harbor, 19 from other islands, 24 from the around the state, and then 3 were from out of the area. So they're primarily Friday Harbor patients. And this is their age. The outside circle is the in the pink is the Friday Harbor patients. So you can see that we saw 16 patients that were under 17 or under last year in Friday Harbor. We saw another 12 that were 18 to 19. The bulk of the, a large number were the 20 to 24 were 41. And then 25 to 29 were 36. With the 30 to 39, 44. And 40 plus, 28. And, you know, it's the, we, Mount Baker, has a larger population of quote, older women in our age, 35 and older, because we have always provided menopause services and always have for many years accepted Medicare. So we do attract folks. And I know I did the last in-person presentation I did in Friday Harbor, somebody asked me if they could come in as a Medicare patient to have an annual exam. And I'm like, certainly you can. And she followed up and she came in. She said it was great. And yeah, it was nice to see, because it was interesting, because she was a little bit upset with her primary care doctor because they didn't do a pap smear on her, and we didn't do one either. And she's like, well, I thought if I came here I'd get one. I'm like, no, the guidance is not that you need one at this stage, so that, you know, your doctor was doing the right thing, that the, you know, we're following the evidence-based medicine. So it was wonderful to sit and chat with her, and she had some questions. And it's really nice to connect with people of all ages. So we have that larger quote, older population, as well as our younger. So they have generally have more insurance. So it helps offset some of the others. Okay. And this is a payment by source. So the Take Charge program is a program that covers people that don't have any kind of funding at all, and they don't qualify for whatever reason for a sliding scale. So they could be here as undocumented, and you know, that's a program we provide those services, we don't ask. And so, but they qualify for this kind of program through the state of Washington. We helped push that forward last year. Our 49 of our patients had Medicaid services, and 60 were on our sliding scale, had no insurance at all. Majority of them didn't have to pay anything. 64 had insurance. And that insurance it's insurance, but it's not real. And the reason I say that is because so many of our patients have high deductible plans that beyond their preventive visit, which is covered, anything that they come in for is generally not. It's covered, but it goes to their deductible. And so in order not to penalize our patients, because a lot of them are low income, if their insurance doesn't pay for their bill, we put them back on the sliding scale based on their income, and then we charge them at that rate. So we never want to penalize anybody for using their insurance. And so if they were eligible for free services by their income, the fact that they have insurance shouldn't, and it doesn't pay, shouldn't keep them out of that access for free services. So even though it says they have insurance, a great majority of those actually convert back onto our sliding scale at a much lower rate, and it works well for everybody. So when they do pay, it's nice, but when it doesn't pay, they're not penalized. Okay. So this is the poverty level for our patients. As you can see, the majority of our patients are on the lower end. I have a bar across the bottom, so I can't see what the rate is there, but you can probably see it. The between the first and second column are the bulk of our patients. Let's see, I don't know what that bar is. So, 101 to 150%. Yes, that's low. That equals, as you can see above, so a family of four, $26,000 to $39,000 a year. So most of our patients are low income, and they are at the right place for us because we never penalize them for their insurance, and we never deny anybody, thank you, You're a wizard. We never deny anybody their services because of their inability to pay. So the ones on the lowest and the 100% or less are totally free. And if you're under 18, your services are totally free. And the 101 to 150 is the lowest end of the slide. And the 250% is the top end of the slide. Oops, I just lost you. Did I cut you off? Oh, there you are. Oh, my gosh. Sorry. Something popped up on my screen. I'm really terrible at technology. I'm amazed that I'm doing this. Anyway, that's how it lays out. So you can see that we are serving the mission folks that we want to serve, which are the majority of our patients are, you know, at below 200% of the poverty level. Okay. And this is just a select sample. As you can see here, you know, the bulk of our work, as I told you, was STI last year. It was pretty significant. We were amazed at how many, we always do a big business in STIs, but that seemed to be the request, and it was really frustrating for patients who were desperately trying to get in, and when we had these long lines and long waits for folks to get in. Then birth control is our second list, and again, I have that bar, sorry. Actually, if I was smart, I'd have it printed next to me, but I'm not that smart. So you all can see what they are because I can't read them. So you can see even in throughout our organization, STIs were big. So it wasn't just in Friday Harbor. So here's where you get a snapshot of that. You can go on to the next one.
Sorry, I'm trying to find a view module work for you. Is this
one? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I can see that. That's better. Yeah, I can see above that line, that little bar in the bottom now.
Okay.
Maybe I have to move it. I don't know. I'm afraid to touch it that I might set out and lose you altogether. Okay.
It's actually a PDF, not a PowerPoint slide, so it's not really optimized for this sort of thing. But
okay.
We'll get the job done here.
Okay. Here we go. So you can see our STIs last year. This is where we were. You'll see that, like, we have 7 positive syphilis tests. That's pretty remarkable. You know, years ago, you didn't have any. I mean, we went for years, maybe even a decade or more, with maybe 1 syphilis test. And last year, we had 7. We didn't have any in the San Juans, but we did have 1 positive chlamydia. Oh, and it's, you know, it's a concern that it's rising, as well as some of these resistant types of gonorrhea. It's pretty... It's pretty alarming. And even the syphilis, the cases, the last December, there's new guidance that I put out in the middle of the month. And it was so significant that everybody had to scramble and double their dosage of medication before the end of the year to try to knock some of the syphilis down. And it's been interesting to try to work with the health departments when we've had these cases and get this medication in, because it's not something we normally stock. So the health departments keep it on site, but they've been having a hard time keeping it in stock as well. So it's nice that San Juan hasn't had any of that. But okay. And there's our pregnancy test services and abortion care. We did 68 pregnancy tests in San Juan County, 999 in Skagit, and 1695 in Whatcom. And then you can see where the abortion care, that doesn't mean no one from the San Juan Islands came over. It means that none in there were done on the island. And, you know, we have toyed with offering medication abortion services over there, but it's a little bit more complicated because of the ultrasound requirement. But right now we just can't even see straight with what we're trying to keep going every day. So these plans are on the list, but they're, you know, not there yet. Okay. And so this is the money, you know, slide that the feds provide once a year. And again, it's the it's what does the work that we're doing actually translate into, and how does it matter? So the feds have a formula that they use. So in 2020, all of the services of Mount Baker Planned Parenthood averted 1,003 unintended pregnancies, and those are broken out by age groups. So the blues are under 19 births averted. So one was a birth averted in Friday Harbor, and 8 were for the 20 to 20, for greater than 20. And then abortions that were averted, and the teenage population was 1 in 8 for the over 20. And then for miscarriages, 1 for under 19 and 3 for under 20. So you can see that we averted 22 unintended pregnancies from the work that we provided last year. Okay. So with the support of the North Side Accountable Community of Help last year, we were able to use some of some funding to launch telehealth services out of the Friday Harbor Health Center. So Debbie Owens is our nurse practitioner who lives in the islands. And so we have been piloting with her to offer some services there. And as we're working out the kinks, we'll be doing a little campaign, a marketing campaign in the islands to let people know that we have those services available to them. And we will be able to also offer not just through the Friday Harbor Health Center, but some gender-affirming hormone therapy services through to all of the islands as well. So we are just beginning to, I guess, to say we're starting to be able to think again, and we're like out of like full-on crisis mode, eyes in, focusing on day-to-day survival, and able to start to think about some of these other projects. So this is one. So Debbie is doing a really great job, and it's been wonderful because Debbie is planning to retire at the end of the year from working in our Mount Vernon Health Center. She's still going to stay working in Friday Harbor, but she's also interested in picking up another day, you know, with us, as long as she doesn't have to get up at the crack of dawn or like right after midnight and get on the ferry and come over to the mainland. So I think it'll even open up our capacity a little bit more. It's been kind of fun to see that and to see our patients really step up for that. We did the, when we were doing the telehealth right in the beginning, we were able to even make space. And we increased our Wi-Fi outside of our Bellingham and Mount Vernon health centers and made some parking spots just for telehealth where patients could pull in. If they didn't have a private place at home to do this, or they didn't have the right setup at home and they had something they needed Wi-Fi, they could pull out in the parking lot and connect to our Wi-Fi, and we could do the visit through that, and then we could go out into the parking lot and like deliver their supplies to them onto their car roof hood, so we didn't have to have the no touch. So it was fun to do some creative kinds of things, and I can say fun now looking back on it. At that time it was super stressful, but it was amazing how creative our staff got to be able to continue to deliver services to people by without having to see them too closely or touch them too closely. So, okay. And then this is our budget for last year. We did end the year with $33,000 excess, but that included the $20,000. So we had missed a payment last year. And so when I had reached out to Pamela and said, I don't think we had gotten paid. We then got paid twice. I didn't realize that until the end of the year that we got paid twice. And so it's now technically that money, that $20,000 that we were extra paid, is the payment that we would have gotten a month ago for the second half of last year. Is that correct, Nathan? Make sure I got that right. Mm-hmm. So now we're good.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So that's why that looks remarkable. And our donors did step up in the pandemic. I have to say we were touched by our donors who came, you know, who actually increased their donations to us in most areas. And that was, I think, probably for most Planned Parents around the country, the biggest surprise, that donors really opened up their hearts and their checkbooks to keep Planned Parenthood going, knowing that we had been under attack for so long, and then the pandemic was. So we ended up roughly with about $13,000 more when you take out that $20,000.
Linda, is that $20,000 in the government grants and contract at the top?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep. And then I wanted to share with you a little bit. Last year, we if you don't know what Prescani is, you probably participated. Prescani is the largest patient satisfaction survey company in America, and Peace Health, Peace Island uses it. So you go to the doctor, you get a survey later in the mail. It's a Prescani survey. And we actually do Prescani surveys as well. And last year, they offered Planned Parenthoods that wanted to an opportunity to participate in a social determinant of health survey of our patients at no extra cost. So we dove on it. We took an opportunity for it. And we found this information I wanted to share with you because it was pretty stunning to me. So the survey was done January to June. We didn't get our information until later in the year. And what we found was that 47% of our patients, this is agency-wide, identified with a social need, and 28% of them identified with two or more social needs. And the our patients that are non-white had higher proportions than our white patients, and which a little surprised was our Hispanic population was a little bit lower. But the not surprising but still alarming was how much higher our LGBTQ and non-binary patients had their needs, and you can see that in the pink lines there, much higher than the straight cisgender population, and that's a growing population for us because of our transgender care. So we attract a fair amount of patients that fit into that category. So they were 1.7% higher odds of experience a social need than our straight respondents, and so that was painful to see. Okay.
Excuse me, Linda. I just had a quick question.
Yep.
It's Trish. What is your definition in terms of this survey of a social need?
I think it's going to be on the slide, next slide. And if not, I'll tell you.
Okay.
Okay. There we go. So what you can see across the top are the social needs. So they had, their food didn't last. They're worried about their food wouldn't last. They were insecure, at risk. They were afraid about losing their housing, unsafe housing, utilities, or transportation was an access. And you can see where this is from the Federation is the second row there, and Mount Baker is the fourth row there. So we were like pretty surprised that we live in such a great area to see that we were higher in most areas than the Federation. And it really like made us sit back and like take stock of this, especially the concerns about food insecurity. That was, I think, probably the biggest surprise to us. And we are trying to see our EMR will do a little bit of this, but not a whole lot. And we're trying to figure out how we can capture this information on a regular basis, and then what we want to do about that. Because I've really lost sleep over the fact that knowing that a third of our patients, in some cases, are hungry. You know, and it just, something's wrong with that picture, that not only is America, but it's Washington and it's, you know, the Pacific Northwest here, our own little region, that our patients are worried about that. And knowing that a lot of our patients are low income and young mothers, it's astounding. And our board is just getting this information to talk about. And we are going to have some serious conversations over the summer about how we can affect some change, or what can we do to try to identify who they are and make sure they're linked with the right care. One of the things we're trying to do is, I'm sure you're all familiar with the North Sound Accountable Community of Health. Mm-hmm. They have a pathway hub model that you can refer patients into, but they're just switching out to a different platform. And we have, we've met with them a couple of times to try to get a bi-directional referral process going where we can refer into the system to make sure our patients can get the specialty care they need in terms of housing and food and all that, and that they can refer back patients that are people that they're seeing that are struggling with these for contraceptive care and STI work. But this was the first time we've ever had this window in our patients. And I don't know what I was expecting, but this really hurt. This really made me realize that you know, there's so much more than just the healthcare services that we provide that we need to be figuring out how to attack. So I don't have any answers right now, but I wanted to share that with you. And hopefully if we can figure out how to do this in our EMR, we'll be able to get real-time information from the islands and as well. So I don't know if any of you are tracking any of this, but or how this looks to you, but it did surprise me. It stunned me, actually.
Yeah. Linda, yep. This is Nathan. Is there any sense of, this is for 2020, I assume, there's no data,
yes.
But
yep.
Is there any sense of how this would compare to non-COVID years?
We don't know that because they've not done it, but we're asking, we've been, the affiliates are saying, we'd really like to do this one again, even if we have to pay for it, because we don't really know, is this average or is this, you know, an anomaly because of COVID or what? So it's hard to have it because you don't have a context for it. Is right. this a standard thing or is this a one-time blip? And would it be better or worse or the same if we did it again? So we're exploring how to do that again.
Fair enough. Thank you. Yeah, that's an alarming slide.
Yeah. Okay. And then these are the data tables that take a deeper dive into the same needs based on different categories. So for African American, Hispanic, white, other race, and then the LGBTQ community. And you can see right there the disparities that come out in our trans population. It is hard to look at and to like try to understand. And right now it's hard because we're not seeing so many people. We have people inside, but not as close as you want to have some of these conversations or for as long. But we have a lot to really wrap our head around. What does this really mean? I mean, when you look at the food insecurity or at risk and you see 49% of our LGBT trans community is saying yes to that, that is like almost one in two. We have several hundred patients that fit that category, maybe even 1,000 that fit that category. That's a stunning number. And we are not right now at any of the tables that are giving out food vouchers or having any of those programs going on. And we're going to change that. We don't know how, but over the summer, we're going to be coming together as an organization and really looking at plans to how to address some of these. Are you as stunned by them as I am, I guess?
Yeah, I am shocked by that. It's terrible.
Yeah, it is terrible.
Those are big numbers. Yeah.
Those are big numbers. And people are suffering in silence, and that's what I find, you know, so heartbreaking. And you know, the unsafe housing conditions too, it can mean a couple, it varies. It can be an unsafe environment in terms of mold in the house or just an unsafe environment because they're with somebody who is not, you know, the person they need to be with. And yeah, it's something. Okay. And then the next table just is, it shows you the country. It's this fascinating, like quick snapshot of how America looks for food insecurity. And you can see in Washington state, we're sort of in the middle there. And the same with renters spending more than 30% of their income. I just thought this was an interesting little slide that they threw in there that I wanted to just share. And I mean, the housing crisis is just surprising right now in our area and across America. And I don't know how people that are making minimum wage are paying for their rent. It's just not okay. And I'm fairly delighted with some of these new federal and state programs that are going to help families and do some tax credits and tax subsidies or subsidies for people with families. And they need the help. They desperately need the help. We see that every day. Okay. So that's our little summary for this year. I'm happy to entertain any questions. Yeah, I mean, it's still hard to, every time I see those social determinant of health slides, I have them on my desk. Yeah, I just shake my head and want to dive in to do something. I just don't know what it is. And something that's sustainable and that makes a difference. And, but doing nothing is not an option for us.
And so hard to provide services to a community that can be really disenfranchised already. So how do you reach them? We were asking before we started the meeting about the changes you've potentially seen with this new administration. Would you follow up on that for us?
Sure. So just this week, the Biden administration published their new regulations to change the Title X program and added additional funding into the program so that we would become eligible again. And it is a process that's going to take several months. If everything went perfect, the soonest that we would be able to re-enter the program would be April of 2022. And there's some thought it might be July, but you know, there's hope on the horizon for that. And then we went in for an increased funding package with the state of Washington. We've been trying to get this funding increased for 20 years, literally 20 years. And we, over the last few years, we hired a consultant. All the Planned Parents in the state put their funds together. So we were getting paid about 45 cents on the dollar for what our services cost us to do. So we were fundraising to support Medicaid patients and our sliding scale patients. And so we put together a package, a big request, and hired a consultant. We worked with a consultant for several months, and then we went to put this package forward and then hired some other internal lobbying help. And we were delighted when the governor included the $5.3 million package in his budget, which is always a good sign. And then both the House and the Senate included that in theirs. Now, the thing that's important about that $5.3 million is it is matched 9-to-1. So that $5 million brings in an additional $45 million into the state for family planning, because for the way Medicaid works, they match certain programs at different rates. So Medicaid is family planning is one of the higher ones, 9-to-1. And so that will be the first rate increase we've had in about 20 years. And I know I signed a facility contract for our health centers in Bellingham and Mount Vernon for our abortion care at the same rate that we signed 20 years ago last year. And, you know, every single thing that we have has gone up significantly, but they would not budge on that. That won't change this won't change that, but it will require that the managed care plans, so only focus on our Medicaid population, our rates will increase. Now, that increase won't happen until October, and you probably won't see any of those funds flow until January, but it'll be retroactive back to October. So we feel pretty good about increasing that portion of our rate, and you know, hopefully, like Title X now will come back in, and so we'll be whole again. I mean, whole is not quite what I mean. It's not, we're not going to be getting costs. We were trying to get cost-based reimbursement like the community health centers have. They have a cost-based reimbursement, so they never lose money, and you know, we lose money in every service we provide, and so it's our intention to try to get closer to that cost. So we are doing the happy dance. We can, like, I'm afraid to even almost say it out loud because it hasn't been signed by the governor yet. And that's the last piece. Once he signs it, then we will have our first true rate increase in about 20 years. And so we almost didn't put it forward because we're like, oh my God, it's a pandemic. The world's going to hell in a handbasket. And, you know, what should we put? And I'm like, well, we should put it forward. We're not going to gain anything if we don't. We might not gain anything if we do, but we won't know. And as it turned out, the stars and the moon aligned, and it moved forward. And so a lot of good things moved forward this year. We did some other packages that we went forward, including requiring hospitals to not interfere with their physicians and their providers if they have a pregnant patient in needing care, because right now some of the Catholic hospitals or religious hospitals don't care for them and don't let their doctors do the care that they need. And this will not allow them to do that. It will not allow the entity to interfere with the care that the patient needs. So we're thrilled about that. And we are several different issues that we put forward are being, have passed. And so we just don't know what to make of it. We've never had a good year like this before. So out of a terrible crisis of COVID came some remarkable resiliency on the part of everybody to, like, let's just, like, put people first and take care of the health and safety and of our people in our state. And I just delighted. But like I said, we'll wait when the governor signs the budget, then we'll celebrate. Because up until then, it's just, you know, it's a bird in the sky. We want it in our little hand here. So, yeah, thank you for asking. It was a hard year. It's been hard four years. We have struggled and suffered and been marginalized and been harassed. Our picketing is higher than it's ever been, and it's very stressful right now to have so much picketing going on. And but, you know, it's, these services are important, and, you know, we are going to be there, keep our doors open, and, you know, we're pleased to, you know, to work with you all and to have your support and to continue to provide services in the San Juan Islands and our little baby bear clinic, the little mighty clinic that could. So thank you for asking.
I just want to thank you so much for the work that you do, for a much needed, all the services that you are providing for us in Friday Harbor and for those in Whatcom and on the mainland. It's just deeply, deeply appreciated. And I feel your passion and your commitment, and very grateful for that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we're in this together, right? That's our service ethos. And I think we really are in this together, because, I mean, this is one thing when you're growing up, you don't really think about the village that actually provides all the care that you need. And, you know, and yet we are all doing that. And so every time a patient walks through our door, they're getting your support. And I want you to know how much they appreciate that, even they don't know it. And we appreciate that. So yeah, thank you. And thank you for this opportunity to come and talk with you and for the extra support that you voted to give us last year. We'll put it to good use, taking care of your neighbors in need. And we're very honored to do that. Well, and hopefully we'll see you in person in the fall. It'll be fun.
Wow, that would be amazing.
Any other questions? Or? Okay.
No, just thank you so much, Linda.
Yeah, thank you very much. Nice to see you all. All right, yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye, Linda. Thanks for your time. Thank you.
Yeah, figure out how to get out of here now.
We got a leave button at the top right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
California.
Commissioner, we should vote to send them that money, even though we already sent it to them.
We've already accidentally paid it forward. So, but we do need to just the formality of approving the funds for the last part of 2020. So, I would entertain a motion to approve the funds for 2020.
Done.
I'm so sorry to be so
illiterate. I just can't memorize the rules, and I feel really badly about that. But
you could say, I move to approve the funds for the last part of 2020.
I move to approve the funds for the last part of 2020 for Planned Parenthood.
Second.
All in favor.
Should we say anything about crediting it, the 20,000 that we've already paid, so that we're not adding a new 20,000?
We're not. We're just approving what was already sent, right?
I know. It just might be nice to mention.
Yeah. Clarify.
Mentioned. Perfect.
Noted. Mentioned in the motion to approve the funds that we've already paid.
Thank you. I heard a second. Is there any discussion? Other than that, okay. All in favor.
Aye.
That passes unanimously. Thank you all. And I just always find that report so fascinating.